catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best-kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Mark Durkin.
And welcome to Education America, where we are taking steps to save the classroom so that we can save the country. Come along with us every Saturday night here on AM 1280 The Patriot. K-12 education is the playing field, as the 16th President Abraham Lincoln so succinctly stated. He said the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. I'm Mark Durkin, joined by my co-host and founder of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom. As critical race theory continues to grow, permeating every aspect of American society, there's also a grassroots movement that is fighting back right here in the state of Minnesota. The movement is educating Americans away from an ideology that threatens to not only further pit Americans against each other, but to forever dismiss the principles of individual liberties found in the Declaration of Independence while destroying individual rights outlined in the Constitution.
That's right. And joining us by telephone tonight to share why it's important to combat the lies stemming from critical race theory is Kendall Qualls. Kendall is a former candidate for the United States House of Representatives, and he is the president of a nonprofit organization called Take Charge Minnesota. The organization strives to unite Americans, regardless of background, toward a shared history and a common set of beliefs, celebrating the idea of the American dream and encourage people working to achieve it. Kendall, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Education America.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Both of you, Mark and Rebecca, you guys are great. And I look forward to spending time with you today.
All right. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, prior to founding of Take Charge Minnesota, you decided to run for a U.S. House seat representing District 3 here in Minnesota. However, you've mentioned that it's not the accomplishments you want to stress, but the life journey you've been on. Start us off tonight by sharing how your life experiences have shaped your passions today and how they encouraged you to run for public office in 2020.
Yes, absolutely. What's interesting, at the time of my life journey, I didn't think it was a God blessing, but it turned out to be, in hindsight, often as we look back on our path in life, unfortunately, my parents divorced when I was very young. I was in first grade. My dad just came back from Vietnam, and we were living in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, home of the 101st Airborne. And they divorced. I moved with my four other siblings to my grandparents, my maternal grandparents' home in Harlem, New York.
Wow. Now,
at that time, in the late 60s, Harlem, New York was like Chicago is today, times 10. It was the epicenter for drugs, gangs, and violence.
Not a safe place to be brought, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So I started my life there in my early childhood elementary school years. And unfortunately, my mom could not handle all five of us by herself. My older brothers and sisters were getting absorbed into the street culture of Harlem. And so about 3-4 years later, my dad came and got me and my younger brother to live with him. He was still a drill sergeant in the Army. He was paying alimony and child support. So the only thing that he could afford was a trailer in a small trailer park in Oklahoma. And so I tell people I got my start in life. I've been called trailer trash, ghetto kid, and a lot worse. The really neat thing about our country is, where you start in life is not where you have to stay in life.
That's
and
right.
I got a chance to see that ability of America, the idea of America at work and personally in my life. And so, you know, I'm a firm believer that if I can do it, anyone can. And I want to encourage people. I've mentored people my entire life, young men and just that have been in my same situation. And when I started hearing the things in my adult life here just a few years ago about the country being systemically racist and that there's white privilege and all of that nonsense, I said, I got to do something. I really have to do something. I think our country's in peril if people start believing this stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Especially when they hear it from elected officials.
Right.
So that's why I got involved, and that's kind of like the start of my life.
Well, mindset is everything, isn't it, Quindle? I mean, that, you know, to come out of that mindset, to recognize it at such a young age, it's amazing how that just means everything. Because if we get in the wrong mindset, we're going to be stuck in that rut mm-hmm. forever. We won't mm-hmm. come out of it.
Yeah. I wanted to just also comment on the fact that, you know, you ran for office, and I know you joke about this when you present, and that you talk about the fact that, well, you know, I get introduced as someone who lost his race, but I think that you are doing almost mightier things in some sense by having started this nonprofit organization. And, you know, I'm sure you would have done great things in Congress, and that may still come down the path for you. But for right now, I love the fact that you're taking that energy and that passion and you're directing it in this way.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. I joke. You know, I tell people, you know, by the end of the year, you know, my opponents, they're going to try to get me elected because they're going to say, man, he's causing more problems in the wild than he is if we got him elected. If we can contain him in office. Right now, he's causing us a lot of problems.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I hope that's true.
Well, speaking after the election there, Quindle, in January of this year, you founded the nonprofit Take Charge Minnesota. What's the aim of the organization, and what narratives in popular culture do you seek to counter against?
Well, yeah, it's interesting you say that. So I started Take Charge as urgings from a lot of my supporters that said, Quindle, you know, your message during your campaign, we need it more than ever in the public square.
Right.
And it's the idea that America works and that we're the foundation of what we all believe in and what the founders started. It said, we can't have a self-governing country if the people are not virtuous. You have a virtuous population, and you don't get virtue from an iPhone app. You know, it's based on biblical, on godly foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And second is you've got to be a literate population. You have to be literate population. And we're struggling on both. So I started Take Charge at the behest of my supporters. We started on Martin Luther King holiday. And on that particular day, January 18th, I got my op-ed published in the Star Tribune.
Mm. Okay.
And it was around three things, and it's you know, a lot of what we support at Take Charge. Is number one, Martin Luther King, he would be rolling in his grave today, realizing that at the time of his death, we were nearly 80% two-parent families in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
We moved from 80% two-parent family to 80% fatherless homes in one lifetime.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's not what the civil rights movement
was all about.
No.
It is shocking. And and I'm going to write another op-ed about this, because not only is it shocking, we've went through this huge cultural, literally a cultural genocide without a national initiative to reverse it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we're going to talk about how the silence of that evil.
Right.
And the second point I wrote in the op-ed was, when it comes to education, you know, education was paramount in the black community from the very beginning. During slavery, you know, slaves were really tortured when they were found trying to learn to read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Brown versus the Board of Education was about equal parity of education opportunity.
Right.
And so right now, again, Martin Luther King, he would be rolling in his grave, realizing that the motivation behind our culture, the motivation is not as there as it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, and this speaks right to critical race theory, this idea of content of character is what we should use to judge people, not color of skin.
Right.
And I said in the article, it was wrong then in his era. And just because the canon is pointed toward another race, mm-hmm. doesn't make it right. It was wrong then and it's wrong now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I just mm-hmm. think it's really interesting. You brought about the point of virtue, and our founders, they understood this. We talk a lot on the show about the Northwest Ordinance, Article 3 of 1787, which is a simple quotation. It says, "Religion, virtue, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged." It was the first federal law passed as it pertained to education. It's completely forgotten about today.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, and that's why it's so important for us to have school choice.
Yes.
You know what? Listen, I came to my Christian faith later in life. I was 27 years old. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid when you know, all these old people were going fanatic about, you know, there's no more prayer in school. There's no more Bibles in school. I didn't get it at the time.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I get it now.
Right.
Yes.
Totally
right.
Get it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we have done all those things that we needed to do early on in kids' lives, we had solid families, mm-hmm. you wouldn't need as much police intervention in our culture today because of the behaviors that we would have.
Exactly.
It would be very different.
Yes, yep. Yes. That moral compass has definitely shifted since the 1960s. You know, you're probably well aware of this, that they did remove Bible reading in schools and prayer in schools in 1962 and 1963. And so we really have seen a dramatic shift in just the morality of our country. And I think you're right, Kendall, this doesn't just affect the Black communities, but it really affects the whole country that our moral compass is off. And we're paying the price for that now. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I love your goals of faith, family, and education. Those are excellent goals for you to be working towards in improving or increasing and valuing in your Take Charge Minnesota group. And we've also, you know, had you talk a little bit about exposing some of the cultural narratives that are bringing greater division in our country. Could you take a few moments to highlight arguments that mostly go unheard in debates surrounding racial justice and actions taken over decades by elected representatives that have brought great damage to families of color?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So there's two things. Again, I'm going to write in my op-ed. So first of all, in the late mid 1960s, mm-hmm. again, you have to keep in mind that although American Black families, we didn't have full access and rights as citizens to the U.S. Constitution. Mm-hmm. We weren't getting due process of law. But during the worst of all of these times, and my father lived through it. My father-in-law lived through it. And their memories and their stories that have been told of how dehumanizing that was,
mm-hmm.
we still had families intact, nearly 80%.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was the 60s that started this process where, one of the first times in American history, we were incentivizing women to have children as long as they remained unmarried.
Mm-hmm.
And that program was called Aid to Family with Dependent Children. A hybrid of that program still exists today.
Mm.
And they actually employed people to go around and inspect, make sure that men, the fathers, were not in the homes.
Unbelievable. Mm. Did they really? Unbelievable.
Yeah. And so at initially you might have thought, well, that was good intentions to help get people out of poverty.
Sure.
That, you know,
and that's
started,
what they would say.
Life.
Mm-hmm.
But after the first decade, the second decade, when they see the collateral damage that is done in the community, there's never been a change. As I said earlier, we've gone from 80% two-parent to 80% fatherless homes. And without one national initiative to change it, no initiative to change that program, especially incentivizing women to have children, out of wedlock. And mm-hmm. So that's one big one. The second one is, if you look at all the major cities across our country, they're predominantly led by one political organization.
Yep.
And in a lot of these major cities, high school graduation rates are abysmal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, we're creating an illiterate population.
Right.
And what's happening is that these people, we have progressive organizers here that actually are weaponizing these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So what do I mean by that? Well, here's what happens, especially for young teenage boys. If they haven't had a father in the home coaching and disciplining and loving, putting boundaries in place, like every father does with their child,
mm-hmm.
so they don't have those boundaries. They're not getting an education. And as they get into their late teens and early 20s and struggling to become independent,
mm-hmm.
provide a
provide a roof over their head. They're not able to articulate their frustration out in a educated way because they've hadn't had the proper education. They haven't had the proper home training to understand how to manage anger. And so you've got a lot of emotionally tense people, population that acts out in an emotional way, and especially when you get the political leaders that encourage it.
Yeah. So true. You know, you've done such a great job of articulating that. I think some of us have had thoughts like that running through our head, but you articulate so very well the difference that that makes to not have a father there or, you know, someone there to really teach the kids discipline and then also to help them to help understand the ramifications of not having an education. I think sometimes people just see it as a statistic, and they don't stop and think about the fact that these are human beings with whole lives ahead of them. And if they're not given the tools to really become independent, and yet they're growing up and becoming 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, and yet they don't have the tools to be independent, you're right. That is a powder keg. That's a recipe for disaster, and that's really what we're seeing, isn't it?
It's absolutely what we're saying. You know, I'll give you an example. So we have a new young Olympic star that's going to be heading to Tokyo, young woman from Alabama. I can't remember her name, but, you know, she was raised by her grandmother. Mm-hmm. Okay, not so this is someone that's, you know, my age or older, not this generation of parents. And she was raised to, you know, do all the things that we were taught as young kids, right? You know, look after yourself, clean up your house, blah, blah, blah. She would get up in the morning and drive her grandmother to work. And then this young girl would go to work at McDonald's. And she would make, she said, $100 every 2 weeks. She said she thought it was the best job ever. And she got up, did that work, and worked hard. And she's one of these kids going to the Olympics because she worked hard and saw an opportunity. And she wanted that job at McDonald's to help pay for college.
Yeah.
And saw running track and field. She was raised by the previous generation, not this generation, that has bought into the victimhood.
Yeah. Oh, so sad.
And on that note, that's very interesting, Kendall. You know, you've stated in the past that true African Americans are doing great in this country. We're talking about people that are moving from the continent of Africa to come here to the United States. And I'd like for you to share with our listeners the success that Africans from other parts of the world and people of color from other parts of the world have experienced for themselves here in the United States.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So I typically don't refer to native-born black Americans, descendants of African slaves of this country, as African Americans. I refer to them as black Americans. Mm-hmm. They're black.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because African Americans, that if they truly felt that this was a land of discrimination, if they felt I have to worry about my kids being shot by police every day,
right? Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't come here. They have a choice to either go to Canada, Australia, because they're one of the most highly educated populations. And I'll just take Nigeria, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the most highly educated immigrants that come to this country, they earn Nigerian Americans that come here legally as citizens. They're grateful Americans. They earn 17% more than the average American, not the average black American, the average American.
And they're
just like any other immigrant that comes to this country. They see opportunity. They don't see the barriers.
Yeah. That's an important distinction too. I hadn't considered that. And I think it's good for our listeners to hear, that you reference black Americans as black Americans, and that the recent immigrants coming from Africa are the ones that you would refer to as African
Americans. And again, that just impresses again, all about mindset. You know, people that are coming to this country, where it's Africa or anywhere else in the world, they recognize the opportunities that are here in the United States. And if you're willing to work for those opportunities, you see this type of success.
Exactly. Yep.
Absolutely. And you know, it's not just Africa. I mean, a lot of black people from the Caribbean islands, same way, they look at native-born black Americans very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately,
I bet.
I mean, they see the issue, and they see the whole family dynamic being one of the biggest problems.
Yeah, they see exactly what you see, which is why they, I'm sure, are very much in support of what you're doing through Take Charge.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've spoken extensively of the solutions to the problems plaguing the Black community. Take Charge, as I said earlier, points to faith, family, and education as the answers, not the narratives pushed through critical race theory. Can you take some time to unpack each of these solutions so that people really have an understanding of what you mean?
Sure. So one of the things that I've done, so I've gone into the Black community, just meeting people, mm-hmm. just through networking and everything else. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I mentioned, just one thing, I just said, look, God did not intend for children to be raised by their mothers alone.
Right.
And all heads nod up and down. I don't mm-hmm. talk politics. I just talk culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone gets it, but they don't know what to do next. And one of the other things I'll say is, you know what, from a marriage standpoint, Black American women, on an annualized basis, they get married 20%, only 20% of the population, and that will get married.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely sad. If not, it's not lower. And what I say is, look, God intended us to be in companionship mm-hmm. in our lives, not alone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they get that too.
Yeah.
And what I've been to share is with this, we did not used to live like this.
Right.
Who wants to help me returning to our cultural roots of what where we were before we had help from the government?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I get people that raise their hands. What would you like me to do?
Oh.
And this is really about educating the next generation. So elementary school, middle school kids, we go to after school programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I have now volunteers that are young Black couples with young kids. And they get the chance to see what a family, a Black family looks like, a nuclear family looks like, because they've never seen it in their neighborhood.
Oh, isn't that just shocking? That's so sad. But what a wonderful thing for you to do. Yeah, to go right to where the kids are after school. That's great.
Right. And so it's how some people actualize in themselves what they can visualize.
Mm-hmm.
But we give that visual life picture. Of a nuclear family with a dad and a mom and kids, so these kids can see it,
mm-hmm.
and so we're doing boots on the ground. I'm recruiting anywhere from 75 to 100 people by the end of the year in the Black community of Twin Cities.
Oh, that's great.
And then we produce a series of videos to help with that communication process as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm. Fantastic. And I know I've been watching some of your videos that you've been posting, and they've been outstanding. Your initial launch video with multiple people in it was, I thought, excellent. I think it was We Need to Talk, I think, was the beginning of it.
Yes.
And the one with Rashad Turner was so excellent. And now your most recent one that you'll be launching soon. You're very good at capturing the important elements and succinctly getting a message out in a very instructive way, but yet also in a real passionate way and in a way that I think engages culture. And I think it's a message that people aren't used to hearing now with critical race theory in their ears everywhere, you know. Yours are so refreshing, and I think it's going to get people to think.
And I think the experiences, too, that Kendall's had from the time that he was a small child. I mean,
yeah.
There's certainly a credibility that's there as well, too.
Right.
Absolutely.
It does. It does give you, it gives him credibility. It gives
Absolutely.
You credibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it didn't feel much like credibility while I was going through it as a kid.
I'm sure not.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes God has us on paths that seem awful at the time, but we see the service later. So, well, I also like to hear that you're recruiting 75 people to help you get into the neighborhoods. I think that, you know, there's always great power with numbers, and you can't do it all yourself, and you recognize that. So training some people to go out into the communities, I think, is going to really be a powerful way to reach your people, the people
right.
in the areas that need to hear it.
Absolutely.
All right.
And you know what, I'd tell you, I'm having a ton of fun doing it. I've had a very rewarding career. I had a rewarding time serving our country in uniform. I think this is just, if not even more exciting to see the people and the sharing their lives and wanting to help a transformation. All of these volunteers that I'm recruiting, everyone's is doing this gratis. No one's being compensated. They're
mm-hmm.
doing it because they want to help change the culture.
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, that's wonderful to see. Well, this year you've had the experience to, or the opportunity, excuse me, to partner with the Center of the American Experiment. And both organizations have undertaken a 17-city tour across Minnesota known as Raise Our Standards Tour. That's you, Take Charge Minnesota, and the Center for the American Experiment. And you guys, the two of you, Katrin Wigfall and you, Kendall, have been speaking out against the state's proposed social studies standards that are rooted in critical race theory. How has your message been received thus far across the state?
Yeah, that has been a great tour. It's neat. When they initially asked me, hey, do you want to go on a road tour with us? I thought they wanted me to join their band. you know, luckily, they don't know how bad I can sing. But receptivity has been huge. I can tell you each one of these events have been standing room only. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice compliment between the two organizations. So Center, such a phenomenal organization. They do a great research. They have to be one of the most practical think tanks that we have in the country, not just mm-hmm. in the state, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But
I agree.
So what Katrin does with her presentation from the center, it gives all of the examples of what the different school districts are using to promote critical race theory. She does a great academic overview, mm-hmm. and then my presentation complements it because I basically share the testimony of my life mm-hmm. of how America works.
Yeah.
If anything that I'm doing, I am not debunking critical race theory. I'm not promoting black privilege or black people. I'm promoting that America works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And guess what? At the end of the day, you have to take ownership for your responsibility. Sometimes the things you do in life don't come out to what you expected in goals, but you know, it's called, you know, get up and try it again. And take ownership and responsibility. And at the ultimate, they take charge. That's why we named it Take Charge of Your Own Life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And what I like, too, is that it's not just the students and the people in their lives that they want to take charge, but your volunteers are taking charge, too. And there is something really enticing about that when you feel like you can do some people oftentimes complain about what they see as wrong in the culture. But when they can take charge and actually do something, it feels so much better for them, and they really can engage then. So you're providing an opportunity for everyone to take charge.
Yeah, it's neat with some of the volunteers. I tell you, I have people that are, you know, women that were attorneys, never got in trouble, just lived a great life. Mm-hmm. I have some women that used to be on welfare, used to be on public assistance, had you know, kids. In fact, that's going to be our next video coming out. Had kids when she was a teenager. Turned her life around.
Yeah.
I said, this is the pathway to go. And she wants to be able to tell that story so her grandchildren won't go down that same path.
Yeah.
And
that is just that's a perfect way for us to really draw to a close our time with you, Kendall, today. And we ask our listeners to join us again next week, where we're going to continue this conversation with Kendall Qualls from Take Charge Minnesota. And Kendall, we are so glad to have you on air with us today, and we look forward to continuing our conversation next week. And for our listeners, thank you. And then for our listeners, you can listen to this podcast and other podcasts at education-america.org or savetheclassroom.org. And we'll see you next week at AM 1280 The Patriot, 6 p.m. Saturday nights.